I would just ask the marshal to introduce the panel and then I'll call the case, please.
Minnesota Court of Appeals is in session. Judge Connolly, Judge Cochran, Judge John Smith, the Honorable Francis J. Connolly presiding.
Thank you. Good morning. This case is 1103 4th Street Southeast LLC versus the City of Minneapolis. The court file number is 821-0684. As all parties are aware, we're doing a Zoom argument. You will have the same time constraints. The appellant will have 15 minutes, respondent will have 15 minutes, and finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. This argument is being recorded in an audio manner. However, we strictly prohibit anyone making their own recordings, either Zoom recordings or their own oral recordings. So please respect our rules. With that, Mr. Alger, if you could just begin and again, identify yourself in a loud, clear voice, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Stuart Alger. I'm an attorney here on behalf of Relator 1103 4th Street Southeast LLC. This matter is before the court on a writ of certiorari. A relator seeks review of a decision by the City of Minneapolis that designated three houses in the Marcy Homes neighborhood of Minneapolis as an historic district under the city's heritage preservation ordinance. The decision of the City of Minneapolis to designate the three structures as an historic district was arbitrary and capricious, not supported by substantial evidence, and erroneous as a matter of law. And Relator accordingly asks that the decision of the City of Minneapolis be reversed and that the designation be set aside and deemed void. This matter centers on the three structures or houses that the city has designated as an historic district in Minneapolis. In 2019, Relator, through North Bay Companies, was planning for the redevelopment of these three properties into multifamily housing. The redevelopment required demolition of the three structures, which triggered the need for historic review letters.
Mr. Alger, I was wondering if you could, I find some sympathy with your argument that these three houses were being treated differently from these other three houses. But the problem I guess I'm having is, you know, unlike the Northwestern case, which you rely on, you know, two different colleges applied for something, one got it, the other didn't. Here, I have some sympathy for Mr. Enslin's argument that's like, well, you know, the only people who want to do something with these buildings are your clients. So, and no one, so why would they consider the other three until, you know, someone wants to do something with those three houses?
The issue of whether the properties here were treated disparately or whether they were similarly situated but treated dissimilarly goes to the factor of arbitrary and capricious. And the argument here is that the designation of the three houses that were constructed by the same contractor, designed by the same architect, for the same owner, and for the same use, the student, eventually the student rooming use, makes these six properties similar. They're similarly situated. The effect of the designation treats the three houses in the historic district dissimilarly. And while it's true that there was no...
What happens if tomorrow, if the city tomorrow looks at those three houses and says, okay, you know, these were even worse examples of Mr. Kenyon's works than your clients are. Okay, so therefore, you know, we're not going to make them historically significant. How do you tee up your argument, which I understand, when, you know, no one is asking to do anything with the other three buildings. And for all I know, the city's going to say, yep, that you can't demolish those either. You know, when the time comes for somebody who wants to demolish them.
Well, that's, Your Honor, well, that's a possible future scenario where the city might do that, might study these additional three properties or other properties in the Marcy Holmes neighborhood or Tinkytown. That hasn't happened. And there's no guarantee, or that's simply a speculative argument on the part of the city. That has not happened. What's happened is that these three properties that are similarly situated have been designated as an historic, in an historic district. And that has immediate consequences for the owners of these properties, because now they are subject to all of the panoply of historic or heritage preservation requirements that other properties that are similarly situated are not. So,
Council, I understand your concern, just following up on Judge Conley's question, but is there any ordinance or statute or rule that requires the city to consider adjacent properties or to consider a certain number of properties? In other words, the city has to draw the line somewhere, and here these three properties were proposed for demolition, so it was a logical group for the city to consider. So can you cite us to any authority that would require the city to consider more than just these properties other than the Northwestern case, which I think is distinguishable?
Your Honor, there isn't anything in the Heritage Preservation Ordinance that requires the city of Minneapolis to consider a specific number of properties or X number of properties. And that isn't a relator's argument here, but the argument is that the city drew the wrong line. If the city is drawing a line and identifying what collection or group of houses that it's going to look at, it must draw the line in a way that makes its decision credible, that provides the basis, a substantial evidence to support its decision to identify these three houses as an historic district. And that's where the city failed. And the case law in support of that are the cases that we've cited in the brief. And in particular, I would direct the court to the Billy Graham decision and the Coalition for a Student Housing decision, where the city did do that work. The city identified a group of houses. In the case of the Coalition case, there were 81 houses identified. In the case of the Billy Graham, which had to do with an automotive district, I believe there were 50 some houses that were identified. And where the city does that, where it does the work of identifying the group of houses or the population of houses that it's going to study, and then makes a determination that these certain houses will be designated as part of the historic district, that's credible work. But that wasn't done here. In fact, and this goes to Judge Connolly's question as well, what's driving the study is just these three properties. There was no study, and that's explicit in the designation study, of the universe of properties that could have been included in this district. In fact, there was no effort made to delineate the district in such a way that there could be a reasoned analysis of whether that district was appropriate. The district is just vaguely defined as Dinkytown or the Marcy Holmes neighborhood. If you look at the other cases where the studies were appropriate, the designation study specifically delineated an area and identified buildings or structures in that area that were subject to the designation study. That is an appropriate level of analysis, Your Honor, and simply wasn't done here. Nor was there an attempt made to identify the particular period of significance.
Mr. Alger, did you ask the city to take a look at those three houses? In coming up with sort of, the Kenyan fraternity, the Kenyan rooming house district or something?
No, that was a decision made by the HPC, Your Honor.
In the Minnesota Greek Letter Chapter housing designation study, did someone ask that, okay, well, we got to look at all of these. I recognize one home was being demolished, but did someone say, well, we got to look at all of these fraternity houses to see, you know, which ones we're going to keep and which ones we're going to not? I mean, did someone ask the city to you know, make a broader study in that case?
The case you're referring to, Your Honor, is the Coalition for Nonprofit Student Housing. Yes. That was a Greek letter house decision. And in that case, there was an application to demolish one building. And as I read the opinion, Your Honor, there was a determination made at the city level to look at the broader universe of houses that might encompass or comprise a Greek letter or Greek chapter house historic district. So I don't recall a specific request.
Because someone in the city was a Delta and they wanted to look at all the Delta houses. Is that the idea? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out how are these things teed up? I mean, you could ask the city, or the city can, you know, decide, well, we need to figure out this fraternity thing because there are lots of fraternity houses and, you know, maybe some of them are worth keeping or some not. But again, I'm trying to get a feel for what the city did wrong here. I mean, I know your argument is they didn't look at those three houses, but I'm trying to get a feel for how that process is supposed to come out so that you can say, hey, you looked at these houses, but not those houses.
I think what could have happened, Your Honor, and what should have happened here is that after a determination was made that these three houses were an historic resource, that and there was a denial of their demolition, the city staff or the city could have said to the HPC, look, if you want to identify a specific group of houses that communicate the student rooming historic use in and around the University of Minnesota, you need to step back and look at this that universe of houses and identify independently what is the area you want to look at and what is the period of significance that we're going to look at. And we need to identify all the houses or structures that meet those criteria that could communicate the themes that the HPC is talking about here. And the city could have done that. It could have at that point said, we're going to do a designation study. It's going to look at this particular area, you know, a 10 block area outside of the Dinkytown commercial district. And we're going to go through the process of doing a rigorous study of all the houses or structures in that area. And, you know, the city argued in its briefing that and you can see this in the transcripts with the HPC, that they were concerned about notice to other owners that might be in that area. And in that, there is actually no explicit requirement for notice at the designation study level, but the city certainly could have provided notice at that point. And those houses that were nominated, or the owners of those houses that were nominated, could have participated in the process at that point. That would have been correct process, Your Honor.
Sorry. I understand your point, and that might have been, you know, a more thorough process and maybe a better process, but our standard of review is very deferential. So how was it arbitrary for the city to draw the line where it did? And I know you go back to those other three houses, but it sounds to me like you're suggesting that it should have been broader than just those other three houses. So I'm a little unclear as to exactly, you know, why, what you're saying in terms of those other three houses.
Your Honor, what we're saying is that the designation study and the basis for the determination to designate this area as a district is based on several comparative or superlative statements in the study that these three houses represent, you know, the best example of Kenyan style homes that best reflect or communicate the residential history of Dinkytown that are the most structurally intact or maintain their historical integrity. Statements that are comparative statements that put these three houses in a different category without any study of what other houses or grouping of houses might provide the basis for that comparative statement. So the comparisons are without substantial evidence, Your Honor. That's where we're coming down. And the three houses driving this process result in a results-oriented outcome, which we're saying is arbitrary and capricious, because the decision which is reflected in these statements about the relative importance of these homes doesn't provide the basis for the court or the public to understand why it is these houses occupy that preferred position. And because the standard here is substantial evidence, arbitrary and capricious, this study and the decision that's based on it is inadequate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Alger. We'll now hear from counsel for the city, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Mark Enslin, and I'm an assistant city attorney with the city of Minneapolis. And I want to start with probably the last thing that my esteemed counsel said, which is about the standard of review. Because there's an argument here about what is the standard of review and whether substantial evidence applies. I think our argument on that regard is pretty simple. That number one, this is not a de novo review. The court cannot just resubstitute its own judgment, that it's very deferential. And I think and our position is that the decision has to be judged against unreasonableness, arbitrariness, and capriciousness, and that there is no substantial evidence standard. And that comes from the Billy Graham case.
That is the case. In that case, the court said we affirm decisions to designate property as historic unless we make an independent determination that the decisions are unreasonable, arbitrary, or capricious. So it's not just limited to arbitrary and capricious, it's unreasonable as well. A decision that, as I'm sure you know, typically in quasi-judicial decisions, the standard of review is whether the decision was, whether there's an error of law, whether the decision is supported by substantial evidence, or whether it's arbitrary and capricious. So, given that language is broader in Billy Graham, is broader than just arbitrary or capricious, why wouldn't that same typical standard of review that applies to all other quasi-judicial decisions apply to this decision? In other words, if a decision is not supported by substantial evidence, isn't it unreasonable, arbitrary, or capricious?
And that may be the interpretation. That is not what the case law says. So if what Billy Graham talks about is unreasonable, arbitrary, or capricious, Billy Graham quotes or cites the Hahn v. City of Coon Rapids case. That's also a Supreme Court case on 416 and 417. The quote there is, our case law distinguishes between zoning matters, which are legislative in nature, rezoning, and those which are quasi-judicial, variances and special use permits. Even so, the standard of review is the same for all zoning matters, namely whether the zoning authority's action was reasonable. Our cases express the standard in various ways. Is there a reasonable basis for the decision? Or is the decision unreasonable, arbitrary, or capricious? Or is the decision reasonably debatable? So that's how we interpret the standard. I think you also look to Billy Graham.
Just following up though, it goes back to reasonableness. And in your, under your argument, if the substantial evidence standard doesn't apply, what level of evidence is required to support this quasi-judicial decision? There must be some, minimum level of evidence. And again, this court is not to substitute its judgment for that of the city or reweigh the evidence. We're supposed to you know, give deference to the city's decision, but there has to be some minimum standard that must be met. I'm sure you would agree with that. So what standard then are you proposing? That's just what is not clear to me.
Yeah, the standard we're proposing is it's whatever is reasonable under the circumstances. I think you used the term minimum amount of evidence. That's how I would interpret it. I think if you look at Billy Graham and you look at what
the court seems said, a little vague to me, but anyway, all right. Thank you for that answer.
I mean, I think it does have to be a sort of, you have to look at the context, and there certainly is some vagueness anytime we're talking about reasonableness. There's some amount of subjectivity. And I think what you have to, how you weigh that then is through the deferential standard, is you have to give the decision makers a wide amount of deference. And that's absolutely what the court did in the Billy Graham case. I was, again, just rereading that case, and I just want to read the final, what the court's final decision was in that Billy Graham case. We conclude that the city of Minneapolis did not act arbitrarily or capriciously in designating the contested northeast portion of the district as historic. Under a higher standard of review, we might reach a different result given the somewhat marginal historic value of this area. Our decision is constrained by the significant deference that we accord the quasi-judicial actions of local governments and the broad and subjective criteria for historic designation set out in the ordinance. So that's sort of the context. This is as the court said, there are broad and subjective criteria for historic designation set out in the ordinance that we're talking about. So there just necessarily has to be a lot of deference. Moving on to the argument.
Enslin, I was wondering if you could shift your argument. I'd like to hear your response to the appellant's argument that, the city, the designation was not compatible with the 2040 plan.
It's entirely compatible, and the that analysis was done. Again, this is an example where a relator is asking for sort of a de novo review for the court to make an independent judgment about whether it agrees about the determination that was made. There's no dispute. I mean, you go to the designation study. There's an entire section that talks about how it's compatible with the 2040 plan. And there are aspects of that plan that talk about preserving the city's history. And this is entirely consistent with that. And this is where you also get into, the relator's whole argument is, well, this should have been broader. There should be more houses included in this. Of course, the more houses that get included, the larger the impact is on other portions of that plan and on the city economically in general. So there certainly is a benefit to the fact that this was very narrowly tailored towards these three specific houses at this point that clearly meet the standards set forth in the ordinance. To pick up on something else that Relators Council said, I think I heard an admission. There is no requirement to consider adjacent properties or consider any certain number of properties. There is no requirement. Relators then entire argument is the city was unreasonable because they didn't consider adjacent properties or consider a certain number of other properties. There is no standard for that. None of the cases set a standard. And
would you agree that the arbitrary and capricious standard applies to the determination as to the area being studied?
Yes, for sure. I think you look at the criteria for the area being studied and you make a determination, was it reasonable for the city to have determined, in this case, these three houses, do they meet the criteria set forth in the ordinance? And did the city follow all of the other requirements in order to designate a property as historical? Obviously, in this case, Relator essentially admits that the city did everything it was supposed to do in that regard. There are tons of different levels of studies. There's state approvals. All of that was done appropriately. So all we're really left with is.
So in your view, why was it not arbitrary and capricious to look at only these three properties and not include the other three that are pointed out by Relator?
Because there's no because there's no requirement to look at others. And number two, because these three properties meet the criteria set forth in the ordinance. I mean, you know, if you go to the actual criteria in the ordinance and the three that the city determined were satisfied, and I'll work backwards, number six says the property exemplifies works of master builders, engineers, designers, artists, craftsmen, or architects. I think it's almost undisputed that that criteria is satisfied by these three houses. And, you know, obviously a study that Relator's own client had commissioned basically recognized as much. And there's substantial evidence, to borrow that term, in the record that these three properties exemplify the works of a master architect. William Kenyon is a master architect. There's no dispute about that. Plaintiff's own study recognized that these could meet that criteria as a small group of speculatively built houses designed by Kenyon. They're these three houses right next to each other that happen to be in three different styles. They're a significant sample of Kenyon's work. They're unique in the fact that they're a different type. They're much more understated than other Kenyon houses throughout the city. They retain the greatest of the six. Of those six houses, the designation study found that the three that were designated retain the greatest historic integrity and best represent the range of architectural styles Kenyon employed at this time during his career. So number six is, I think there's substantial evidence to support the city's determination there. And there are other criteria satisfied as well, because I don't think we have to overcomplicate this. These are three houses built around the same time in 1900. They've been used as historic, they've been used as college rooming houses for 100 years. They're located in Dinkytown, right next to the University of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota is obviously an important part of Minneapolis. Dinkytown is well recognized. They were owned by a female, which was unusual at the time. She happened to be from a family with the historic significance to the city of Minneapolis. They were all owned by the same person, built at the same time. They had the same use. They retain the same sort of general integrity. These are all facts. They're not complicated facts, but they're all facts. They're evidence. And that's why the decision was made. And it was, you know, it's absolutely, absolutely reasonable. And it's supported by substantial evidence.
Feel free to quit while you're ahead, Mr. Unslin.
I will do that, Your Honor, unless you have any other questions. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I don't think the panel does. Mr. Alger, sir, you'll have the last word, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the three criteria the city relies on, Relator does not agree that criterion number six relating to the work of a master architect, in this case, William Kenyon, is satisfied in this instance. There's no evidence in this record of a study, a broader study of, well, what is the representative group of houses that William Kenyon designed and how do these three fit within that group? There's an assertion that they represent a category of design that is, you know, less expensive or not exemplary of his best work, but more, less costly sort of work. But what the city is doing in effect there is saying, well, we think there is this second category or this other category of sub-exemplar work of a master architect that should be identified and represented. And if that's simply not the representative of the criterion, the criterion number six, which is requires the city to identify property that exemplifies the work of master builders, engineers, or architects.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Relator's own consultant conclude that the three houses appear to meet criterion six as a small group of speculatively built houses designed by Kenyon?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. That was a study that was required after the city identified these properties as historic resources. And that is that statement is in the that study. But in a letter that that same author said that, you know, there really needs to be a broader study of Kenyon's work. And there's a lot of evidence in the record from earlier work that was done looking at the Kenyon work around the city of Minneapolis that identifies many buildings and dwellings that he designed. He was a prolific designer, but none of that work was even pulled into this study. There's even about another six Kenyon houses, including the three or Kenyon structures, including the three that were adjacent to the three subject properties here, that were mentioned but not studied in this designation study. So if the city agrees, or the evidence in the record is clear that these three homes are not exemplary of this particular sort of design, you know, Queen Anne shingle type structures or revival colonial, but instead what the city is saying that these are more practical applications of those designs. Well, if that's the case, then there should be some basis to make that statement, and that's just not in the record. In connection with the issue or the statements that these three homes, as opposed to the other three Kenyon properties just next door, retain the greatest integrity, again, that's just simply a statement in the criteria or the study, the designation study. There's no analysis there to support that conclusion. If it's true, then there needs to be some basis for that conclusion in the report, and it doesn't exist. If the city wanted to designate an historic district that communicated the themes of interest here, then what it could have done and should have done is identify the delineated area of interest, identify the homes in that area or structures that should be studied, identified significant female owners of those buildings that would communicate the particular history of female development of these kinds of homes, and demonstrated that the student rooming use was one that arises in a particular period in the city of Minneapolis in that area. That work's not done. As I've said, the particular the period of significance is really just driven by these three houses. It's the period begins when the first house was constructed, and it ends when Mary Loughran and her family sold the last house. Well, that's not an independent determination of a period of significance. It's, again, driven by these three homes. And that, Your Honor, is the basis of a conclusion that this is really just an arbitrary determination of what is the significant period, what is the significant area, and what's the significant group or collection or universe of houses that we should look at in order to make this determination. There is a standard.
Mr. Alger, I think we've let you go a little over your time. So if you just want to sum up, you know, maybe in a sentence or two, your argument.
Your Honors, the argument of Relator is that this designation, this historic designation, which has significant and profound impacts on the owners of these properties, should be based at a minimum on substantial evidence and should not be arbitrary and capricious. And what the record does not contain the evidence that supports the designations that have been made. And it's appropriate for this court, and Relator asks that the designation be set aside and deemed void.
Thank you very much, Mr. Alger. Thank you very much, Mr. Enslin. We will issue our opinion in 90 days. The panel now will be reconstituted once again. Thank you.
Thank you.